You're listening to TIP.
Hey everyone, welcome to this Wednesday's release of the Bitcoin Fundamentals Podcast. On today's show, we have a special guest, Mr. Corey Clipston. Corey comes with a wealth of knowledge and experience in the Bitcoin space. He's the founder and CEO of Swan Bitcoin, which is a noteworthy exchange. During our discussion, Corey provides some incredible insights into how corrupt and broke many of the incentives are for the quote-unquote crypto ecosystem, where we discuss things like FTX, JPEGs of monkey pictures, and much, much more. That's why I've titled this show, It's Bitcoin, Not Crypto. And after you're done listening to this, you'll understand why so many people in the space take deep offense to the two being lumped together as the same thing. So without further delay, here's my conversation with Corey Clipston.
You're listening to Bitcoin Fundamentals by The Investors Podcast Network. Now for your host, Preston Pysh.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm here with Corey. Corey, welcome to the Investors Podcast.
Hey, good to be here, Preston. Thanks for having me.
Corey, I think everybody wants to know what in the world is happening in this space right now. And as a hardcore Bitcoiner, and I know you're a hardcore Bitcoiner, it's just kind of like, yeah, I know all this stuff's blowing up. I've got all my coins in cold storage, so it just really doesn't matter. But for people that aren't comfortable, or maybe they had funds on FTX or they have them on some other platform and they're just like, what in the world is this? Give them a rundown of what's playing out, why it's so important to fully understand what's playing out, and it just give us the one over the world from your point of view.
Well, the good thing is, as you noted, if you have your coins in self-custody, you don't need to know all the stuff that's going on. It's only if you actually have your funds at risk that you need to follow the stuff closely. And we've seen some crazy announcements over the last couple of days of very sophisticated, smart, you know, pretty good people who happen to run crypto funds. Even one in particular, who I know personally is 99% Bitcoin in his own personal portfolio, but he runs a crypto fund just actively trading this stuff. And, you know, that guy kept about 40% of his funds crypto on FTX. It looks like, you know, so that was Galois Capital, and that's Keith. He's, you know, really smart guy and pretty good guy. Travis Klang over at Ikigai, who a lot of people in Los Angeles know, really strong arguments for Bitcoin. You've seen his tweets. We think very similarly about Bitcoin. I very much disagree with him on DLT / blockchain, crypto, whatever, having any lasting value. But otherwise, he is a nice guy and he's a smart guy. And man, had almost all his hedge funds crypto on FTX.
It's insane.
So just in line for pennies on the dollar, maybe someday.
Talk to us about like what Sam was doing, like, because this isn't like he just made some bad positions. I mean, it was fraud. He was doing things that were just really unethical in many different ways. But talk to us about it.
Yeah, fair enough. So, I mean, at the end of the day, he was clearly gambling with customer funds. The money's on the exchange and they were trading it. And that's all you really need to know. I think we'll find out all the details over the coming months, but I think it's fair to say that even though technically you have to put the alleged around that today, I think it's really clear that's what happened. Otherwise, he would have been able to let people withdraw their funds. And instead, we see that they're trying to raise $9.4 billion to cover over the hole they have in their balance sheet.
Wow, that's the number right now, $9.4 billion.
Yeah.
Like that number.
First it was $1 billion, then it was 5 to 6. Now it's actually 9.4.
I mean, that number is just so massive. Do you think that a number that massive could spill into like traditional markets and start to create contagion in the traditional markets? Is it that big of a number or?
No, it's not big enough to mess with the regular, the traditional financial system. It's just causing mass contagion across the non-Bitcoin crypto ecosystem. Obviously impacting the Bitcoin price, but I think that's just a short-term thing and we Bitcoiners don't really care.
Do you think that everything that happened in the Luna Celsius, I don't know how many months ago, that probably has been like 4 or 5 months ago, was Sam tied in? Do you think he was having issues through that and it was the can was just kicked, or is this a whole nother manifestation of kind of the same thing?
That seems the most plausible, and I am not a sophisticated on-chain analyst, but what's his name? Luca Nuzzi is that Nick's partner over at Coinmetrics. So he put out a thread about 10 days ago and actually did some on... Once he saw what had happened and had a hypothesis, it was easier to go and find what he was looking for. And he thinks that he found a transfer of, at the time, a little over $4 billion worth of FTT tokens from FTX to Alameda. And that is likely because Alameda actually blew up alongside Three Arrows Capital and everybody else.
Wow.
Alongside Luna, and probably had exposure to Three Arrows Capital, which had a lot of exposure to Luna. We don't know yet whether Alameda had a lot of direct exposure to Luna, but it wouldn't be necessary as long as they had a lot of exposure to one of the other desks that were blowing up or funds that were blowing up. And that probably propped up Alameda and let them claim. Because again, because of the myth propagated by Sam and his PR machine, nobody really did any diligence on them. So if they could say that they had X dollars worth of collateral, people would lend to them. And so even though the vast majority of that collateral was this printed out of thin air token from their sister company that literally was next door in the same building with the same ownership and back doors between them that Sam and friends coded so that they could not trigger audit review or even risk committee review as they funneled money back and forth between the two companies, again, allegedly, but it appears this is what happened. All these companies would lend to them because they said that they had the collateral.
What I get when I'm seeing some of the things that are being posted on Twitter is just a total lack of decency and respect with so many people in this space. And let me give you an example. So like one of the things that you read on Twitter was this engagement where Sam was raising funds from Sequoia. And it was this chat log where he was literally, Corey, he was playing a video game, like some Dungeons and Dragons video game, while he was pitching Sequoia on how for the round that they are raising. I have no idea the amount that they are raising, but I would guess it was in the billions.
They raised a billion, including about 400 million of that from Sequoia.
So this meeting was a $400 million meeting, right? Like,
yep.
No regard for your employees, no regard for your existing customers. I don't know how many millions. I would imagine they had millions of customers.
5 million.
Five million customers. No regard for, no respect for the amount of work that it takes to earn $400 million. Like, he's there, and I can only imagine if this is a Zoom call, the Sequoia employees that are sitting on the other end, and they're probably, you know, watching videos or doing their own or on Twitter or whatever while they're taking the meeting. And then they're just filling out these chat logs saying, oh, I love him. He's so brilliant because he said he could integrate bananas into his application on FTX. Like the whole thing just seems like it's straight out of a really bad horror movie where both sides are just total scammers on both sides. Like, and there's a question in here somewhere.
Well, so this gets at the problems with crypto VC, right? And so now I think finally, we Bitcoiners and the journalists that care about truth, just like Bitcoiners care about truth, appear to have enough of a microphone or enough of a megaphone to start going after the absolute scam fest that has been going on for the last 4 or 5 years in Silicon Valley.
Talk to people about
strong enough to really go out with a hard hitting thread about Andreessen Horowitz that I posted this morning.
Oh,
so I haven't talked about this anywhere, but
walk us through it.
We can talk about that a little bit, but you know, and I've talked about these themes and kind of what's going on, but essentially there's never been a better industry vertical for the venture capital business model than crypto, meaning non-Bitcoin altcoin scamming.
Why?
Because they benefit from information arbitrage and regulatory arbitrage. And at the same time, and basically they can, so any crypto VC deck, when they go and raise from LPs, only needs two things on it. Really, it's just literally one is short time to liquidity. And the second is we make our own weather. And these are the two things that when I came into the space, as lots of people know, I was in Silicon Valley ecosystem, advising startups, cutting angel checks, you know, starting in 2012, 2013, all the way through going Bitcoin full time in 2018, that first 11 months from like May of getting caught up in the ICO run up and Bitcoin and everything through about April of 2018, when I decided Bitcoin was the only thing that mattered, I was heavily immersed in all aspects of the crypto space. And I heard this said over and over and over again and didn't see the obvious lie in that and just how immoral it is to hinge a business model on short time to liquidity, meaning that you don't need to have revenue, you don't need to have product market fit, none of that. It doesn't need to be real because you can just dump this token on retail or on dumb institutional.
And there's no mark or there's no product, there's no service.
There's no product, there's no nothing. It's just self-referential gambling and gambling tools. And that's it, on something that has no inherent value or no real world use case. And then we make our own weather is that they all are just marketers. And so this is where it becomes really important that the genesis of Andreessen Horowitz is in partnership essentially with CAA. It was basically modeled after CAA. This is the talent agency down in Los Angeles. So Mike Ovitz, the founder of CAA, was the senior advisor to Ben and Mark when they started the firm. They kind of modeled it after CAA. The whole point was that they were going to treat the founders of these companies as talent, the same way a Hollywood talent agency would treat their talent and would be kind of in service of them. But what it also came with is in the DNA of that firm from the very beginning was to make your own weather, to put out your own media. So this is where you see them always putting out podcasts and trying to get everybody at their firm to blog all the time and hosting conferences and just being in the media as much as possible. They even created a new media arm a couple of years ago, basically specifically to push their crypto agenda called Future. Essentially, they push out and market and make their own weather with these crypto scams that get short time to liquidity. And as long as the window is open where these things are unregulated and you can say whatever you want about magic bean stocks on the blockchain or whatever that will save the world, you can go over and over again and push WorldCoin, Helium token, Axie Infinity. You can buy $300 million worth of Solana and get all your friends at CAA and the other agencies down in Hollywood to have all these celebrities go on talk shows talking about their Solana, which happened in the summer of 2021. And then they can dump it as soon as it pumps and get out of their cost basis and still let some ride. And as long as that window is open, they're going to continue doing it because you stack these funds, you raise a fund. If you can get out of the J curve where you've made your investments and you start to have exits, if you can start to show that you've actually returned the fund, the faster you can do that, the faster you can raise another fund. So Andreessen Horowitz is on like fund number 4 now, I think. It's between $12 and $15 billion that they're collecting 2% on of these crypto funds. It's so much money that they can hire people out of DC over and over again as partners in these funds deliberately to get around the regulations around lobbying. So if you spend more than 20% of your time in DC lobbying, you have to register as a lobbyist. That doesn't count if you're a partner in a company. So they just hire people straight out of DC, make them partners of these funds, and they can basically be in DC full time, arguing for Ethereum matters or whatever it is that they're trying to get across. And, you know, the game that SBF was up to over the past year and a half, 2 years, was essentially trying to wrest control of crypto, oversight of crypto, away from the SEC and put it under the CFTC. And they've been working on this with Paradigm, which is Fred Ersom, Brian Armstrong's co-founder at Coinbase. This is Andreessen Horowitz. This is FTX. This is also Coinbase. And obviously the entire Ethereum Foundation and Joe Lubin and Novogratz at Galaxy and all these guys essentially trying to have crypto regulated by anyone other than the SEC, because the SEC obviously knows that this stuff all passes the Howey test and these are all securities. So they've basically just been dangling millions and millions and millions of dollars in front of the CFTC and saying, if you regulate us, please charge us tons and tons of money so that we can staff your office and you guys will get super, super powerful and you'll be, you know, big swinging dicks out there at the CFTC because you'll oversee this burgeoning crypto industry. Just, you know, wink, wink, regulate us with a light hand.
I'm so disturbed just hearing, like, what you're saying now is just crystal clear, like what the model is. But I've never even, I knew there was this perverted incentive structure that was happening up there with, and you just named one of many firms, I think, that are all in cahoots doing this in the VC crypto space, right? But then
The worst actors are like Andreessen Horowitz, Multicoin Capital. Kyle Samani hasn't said a true word in probably 6 years. It's all just trash, marketing, scheming, pumping, dumping, scamming.
How do you overcome something like this?
Truth helps, just exposing it. I think that's one of the reasons that Bitcoiners and journalists, especially this year, have increasingly found common cause. There are a lot of journalists that actually want to find the truth, including quite a few that actually work for Crypto Rags. So they're industry journalists, but they actually have real backgrounds in journalism. And kind of like me in my first, almost year in the space, going through my shitcoin horseshoe of like, hey, there's Bitcoin, let's explore all this other stuff. They've been bamboozled by these people with credibility, right? I used to read Andreessen Horowitz's blog religiously. Mm-hmm. I used to read Fred Wilson's newsletter every single issue as soon as it hit. This is the guy that runs Union Square Ventures, which has been a big crypto scammer. Like, I used to read his newsletter every morning. Like, and he's a good guy. I actually think Fred probably just doesn't get it and just doesn't understand what's going on. Maybe. Andreessen Horowitz has no excuse. Like, they're very clearly, like, deliberately got 140 of their employees registered as representatives so that they could sell securities in case anybody came hunting for them. They did that back in 2018. So they knew exactly what they were doing this entire time.
I'm totally floored by what you just said.
I think the way that Bitcoiners have been driving home the message of Bitcoin, not crypto, mm-hmm. for the entire year of 2022. That was literally the mantra of Swan, for instance. And I've done this in every media appearance. I've stopped interviews live on TV when somebody says crypto. And I don't care if I use 45 of the 60 seconds for my spot to explain the difference. Like, that's the message I'm getting across. I think that you're going to see a great industry of venture capital based in Silicon Valley now reject the scammers and kick them out. So you have firms like Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield Byers, that's been around a long, long time. And they were the top firm in the Valley for many, many years. The biggest investor in Google, things like that. They've never done crypto. So it's in their interest now to separate themselves from the Sequoias and the Andreessen Horowitzes and all of these people that have jumped on the money train and basically just taken advantage of this one-time opportunity to get super, super rich by scamming the people. And I think you'll see nature healing in Silicon Valley, but it's going to take a while and it won't be completely done until the longest con of all, Ethereum, actually collapses and is exposed.
Talk to us about Ethereum then. I'm curious just to hear your very candid overview.
Listen, you've probably had plenty of people on to talk about Ethereum, and I'm not really like, that's not next on my target list. I'm not a coin PI.
Yeah.
The ones that catch my attention are the ones that that are really close to Bitcoin, mm-hmm. And that have false narratives around Bitcoin. Nick Szabo, I'm paraphrasing here, at some point said that, it's more or less like save your bullets for influential ignorance. And I take it a step further. I save my bullets for influential ignorance that directly affects my day, essentially, what I work on.
Yeah.
If I saw Luna, an obvious coin, talking a bunch of mess about Bitcoin and how we had common cause, like, my gut says, now let me figure out why and let me expose it, which I did starting back in March. And then obviously that resulted, their fraud collapsed by May 9th or whatever. And then it was Celsius. And you could see right away, as Mashinsky started taking to the airwaves after they dumbly tweeted that they had pulled over $500 million of customer funds out of Anchor, which was part of the Luna Ponzi scheme, was the key component of the Luna Ponzi scheme. Obviously, I jumped all over that. And I was like, why were there customer funds in an obvious Ponzi scheme? You guys are clearly not good stewards of risk, and you're probably in on it. And then, he put out a video, Mashinsky put out a video saying that Bitcoin maximalists are responsible for 30% of Bitcoin being lost because they encourage self-custody, as he was trying to recruit deposits. And it's like, dude, this guy is trying to pay out old investors with new investors' money. It's very clear. This is a Ponzi. And so I just started yelling about Celsius. It collapsed June 12th, like a month later.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Value investing in 2024 is lonely. You listen to the podcast and spend countless hours researching companies, but still feel like something is missing. What it is that you don't have others around you to help accelerate your learning efforts and your portfolio returns. This is exactly why we launched our TIP Mastermind community. In the TIP Mastermind community, we have nearly 100 passionate value investors joining our weekly live Zoom calls, sharing stock ideas, connecting with TIP hosts, joining our calls with special podcast guests like Chris Mayer and Gautam Bade, and most importantly, building lifelong relationships. We also host 2 live events per year in New York City and Omaha to take those relationships one step further. The TIP Mastermind community is exactly what I needed as an investor, so we decided to create it ourselves. Now I'm surrounded by so many like-minded investors who continually help me step up my game. We're capping the group at 150 members, so if you'd like to learn more, you can visit theinvestorspodcast.com/mastermind. That's theinvestorspodcast.com/mastermind. When Rain Wilson had a great idea, he turned to AT&T Business. They assured him no matter how out there his idea may be, they had his back. So he came up with this, a talking pillow designed to put you to sleep, backed by a reliable network and the only network with built-in security controls. And thus, Sleep with Rain was a hit. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. Kyle, you're connected with a ton of different investors and portfolio managers, and you're just really in the know on a lot of these things. How do you keep up with all the day-to-day headlines for your portfolio companies?
Yeah, so I used to have a ton of issues with this, and that was until I started using Yahoo Finance.
Really? What's so great about it?
So Yahoo Finance is awesome. I have my whole portfolio entered and I can easily see all the top headlines to keep up with the recent news. And each day you get an overview of the major global events that might be moving the market. So I'm ready to easily pounce on any opportunities that come my way.
What else can you do on Yahoo Finance's platform?
They also have a number of cool features, including a tool that lets you link all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings, and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts.
Well, now I know that the audience is really going to love this one. And I actually see they have 90 million monthly active users.
For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com.
The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, back to the show.
Corey, I couldn't imagine the number of like DMs and just thank yous that you've received in the past year. Because,
yeah,
you know, maybe
it's probably over 1,000 now, like
really
felt letters of saving marriages, saving families, saving finances, saving their mothers, their brothers, their cousins, their coworkers. Yeah. Across all of these, it's just mountains and mountains, hundreds of millions of dollars.
You know, I'll say this, you had the courage to actually speak up. And although some other people maybe might thought something was going wrong, right? They're just like, oh, that looks really ugly over there. But what if I'm wrong? So I'm not going to say anything. You put your neck out there multiple times in the past year to help people. Well, truly, your intention was to help people. And I don't know that there were really many others that were saying anything, especially with the Luna and Celsius blow up. Like,
well, I mean, the hard thing is like, there's even people that are, you know, known as like Bitcoin influencers. Like I think Anthony Pompliano is probably the biggest example. I mean, he was actively promoting Do Kwon and Luna, putting him on his show, talking about how good it was for Bitcoin. And this is also somebody that actively promoted BlockFi all these years, you know, and that's a company that I sort of never trusted from meeting the management early on. Didn't really go after them. Like it's kind of a neutral actor in the space. But then FTX, I mean, Pomp had like so much shilling of FTX and so much sort of mythologizing and participating in that. He's not the only one. Obviously, a ton of people have pumped up FTX as being some sort of like wunderkind genius. But the guy clearly wasn't. I think there's just this thing with people like SBF and Vitalik where people look at someone that acts that way. He's just kind of like slovenly and awkward and talks yeah. like in computer code or something. They assume that that's a genius. I think, I don't know, maybe it's my background having been a journalist before I ever got into business, but that's how I grew up. I wanted to be a journalist from the time I was 8. I found a what do you want to be when you grow up from 1986 that said I wanted to be a journalist. And I did practice for a while. I was in local NBC TV reporter. And I think we bring the code of journalism. I went to University of Missouri, the first journalism school in the world. And I think we bring the code of journalism to our work at Swan, and we try to be objective, and we try to caveat things that we always caveat things that we aren't certain of. So you'll notice I'm extremely careful in what I say and what I tweet. Only if I'm certain of something do I say it. Otherwise, I just poke and I ask questions. And I poked and asked questions about Sam and FTX from June through 12 days ago. We're recording here on the 14th. And it wasn't until 12 days ago that CoinDesk got in touch because of my constant poking and passed me the balance sheet, and we, you know, broke the story. I was certain that Luna was a Ponzi. That was obvious after looking at it for about 14 or 45 minutes back late March. Once I saw that they had this 20% interest on Anchor and that that was essentially propping up the ecosystem and that they were backfilling it, it was like, oh my God, that is clearly going to collapse. So I had no problem whatsoever just telling everyone that was going to collapse.
How much more contagion or impairment do you think there is in the space right now after all of this that that hasn't happened yet or is still getting churned through right now?
I mean, my pet number is I tally up the amount invested in the scam crypto ecosystem over the last 30 months is about $40 billion of money that came into Paradigm and Andreessen Horowitz and all these funds. So, you know, I mean, as far as market cap, obviously these are propping up market caps that are complete garbage, but obviously those are, that's not real money. If you have some, I mean, literally a complete fake project like Link, which is probably still in the top 20 that claims to have solved the Oracle problem when anyone that knows computer science knows that the Oracle problem hasn't been solved. It's like, well, that's actually a complete lie with a multi-billion dollar market cap. Plus, you know, Solana is still hanging out there. Obviously a value of zero. It's completely centralized. Jump Capital controls their oracles. When the Oracle was going to make them lose a lot of money, they just shut down their oracles. That just happened last week. You know, so it's just completely fake. It's not decentralized at all, right? Yeah, I mean, at minimum, $40 billion of real money invested.
And then whatever, you know, multiple
poorly by these crypto funds needs to just wash out, plus all the market cap that created. So
that's the hard part, is like how much capitalization or multiple is there on top of that number that has been factored in that still needs to deflate with it. All right.
I mean, it's funny too, though, right? Because we suffer in the short term right alongside them as Bitcoiners. It looks pretty dang clear that Alameda Research was running an algorithm on multiple exchanges to essentially create the echo bubble or the echo bull market in Bitcoin in 2021.
What do you mean by that? Because
they saw correctly that it would cost them less money to market make and keep on creating the illusion of a second bull market in the second half of 2021, because they knew that there would not be a bull market for Solana. They hadn't pumped Solana enough. It was positive ROI for them to spend a few bill to pump Bitcoin, because they could make way more billions by dumping their Solana. If they could get Bitcoin to pump and kind of drag the whole market up, Solana would be high beta to that, and they'd make $20 billion on that while spending $2 billion to pump Bitcoin.
I'm not sure that. So are you saying that the double pump in the last bull run?
Saying that Alameda created the second pump, probably.
Wow. Wow.
And they did it to pump their Solana bags.
Holy moly, dude. So let's go down that path a bit, right? So if they're able to do something like that, is this something that can be exploited moving forward by other exchanges? Like, let's say Binance. It doesn't seem like there's too many differences between Binance and FTX, other than maybe the intelligence of CZ versus SBF. But what are your thoughts?
I think what was special about Solana is so many of the big players were willing to go along with it and essentially pump the bags at the same time. So FTX and Sam were completely behind it. Andreessen got completely behind it. Multicoin was completely behind it. CAA and the entire Hollywood apparatus, all the crypto inflected agents and managers were all behind it. And so I think they, like the one that's on the come now that has the same group of people aligning around a new pump is Aptos. APTOS has basically the same group of cockroaches that scurried away after dumping Solana, and they've kind of like realigned this giant crypto cockroach, like, you know, Voltron style, and they're getting behind Aptos to try to pump that. So we'll see if they succeed. But yeah, you could see them whatever trading desk is still around that kind of leads the charge and sets their black box algorithms behind trying to fake a bull market in Bitcoin before all this stuff washes out so they can try to pump their Aptos bags. You could see something like that happening again. Again, all of this is illegal according to the rules on the books. And all of these things are securities. And if they were regulated as such as what they are, none of this is legal. None of these exchanges are legal, including Coinbase, obviously Binance, FTX, UX is not legal. Like none of this stuff is legal according to the rules on the books. And the reason those rules are there, you know, you can certainly have a principled stand and you can say like the SEC shouldn't exist, bro, you know, or there should be no regulations. And that's fine. If you're out there, you're in DC and you've been banging the table saying like Stratton Oakmont should be able to like market penny stocks to your grandma at the nursing home and let the market decide. That's totally fine if that's your hardcore libertarian stance, but you can't have it both ways. You can't not want Ponzi schemes and OTC stock manipulation and fraud on elders and stuff, and then be pro crypto being unregulated. You can't have your cake and eat it too. So you can't be Coinbase and benefit from all of the credibility that comes with being listed on a major US stock exchange. And all of the credibility that grants you around the world, knowing that you're regulated, that you're audited, that you have analyst coverage, all this stuff. And then on the other hand, say, oh, but these other securities that are trading on my platform, don't look there. Those aren't securities. Balaji hired some shitty lawyers and they have a framework and they said that they're not securities. But of course they are.
Talk to us about the library ruling that recently happened. Are you dialed in on any of that and what the ramifications of it are?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So it's not the highest level court, it's New Hampshire, but there are plenty of examples in the past where well-reasoned rulings from courts of that level, which is the same level as I believe the Southern District of New York, which is probably the one that matters and would set precedent for everybody else. If they take up their next case and agree with the ruling on library up in New Hampshire, then I think basically the game is over for these fake decentralized projects in the United States. And the really interesting thing about library is you can literally sub Ethereum in for library in all of the findings, and it's the same. So there is no fair notice granted. They said, no, we didn't have to tell you before. It's up to you to follow the rules on the books. Nothing changed here. This was a security. You sold it with expectation of creating profit. It passes the Howey test. Like, and obviously anything south of Ethereum on the leaderboard is the same.
So then how would that get applied to the exchange? So if you're Coinbase and you're seeing this library case, which I know Gary Gensler was on CNBC, I think at the end of last week, and he was running around talking about this particular case. How do the exchanges view that? What do they do differently? Because it seems pretty crystal clear what the SEC's position and the US government's position is as to these all being securities at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they'd all have to register as securities and Coinbase would have to register as a securities exchange.
And they're not in the works of doing anything of the sort, correct?
I think they're prepping for that future. There's too much money involved not to prepare for it.
And Bitcoin is the only commodity, correct?
Yeah, it's the only one that's actually a commodity. And obviously the Ethereum people are trying to line as many pockets in DC as possible and cut as many deals with the bankers as possible, because the natural axis of shitcoinery is banks, government, and shitcoins. So they're trying to get together and do what they can to save this thing. But you know, at the end of the day, it just went proof of stake. This thing is gathering interest. This thing is centrally controlled. It's getting more centralized every day. A small group of people decides its fate, hard forks it constantly, changes its monetary policy all the time. Like, this thing is obviously a company that's controlled by a small number of people for the benefit of the price of the token that people invest in.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't a commodity, obviously.
Corey, I want to talk a little bit about your background. So you used to work at Google, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then you came into the space. You said that you went Bitcoin
Maxi.
Well, I got
into venture for a long time first.
Uh-huh.
So I was just doing like normal startup stuff and cutting angel checks and advising startups. And I was like the number two guy in an ad tech company from like 2013 to 2015 after leaving Google. But yeah, I mean, way back in the day, going back. So I did the broadcast undergrad. I reported while I was still in school. I was on the local NBC station, decided not to do that, and went interned at Microsoft and went to work for Microsoft instead. So that got me out to New York. was at Microsoft. Then I was at Morgan Stanley doing private client marketing, basically. Mm-hmm. So putting together all the newsletters and presentations and videos for all of their wealthy clients, including the high end of the Dean Witter clients that had just come over. And then I went to B School, University of Chicago. Back then it was the other GSB. Now it's Booth, but I was there from 02 to 04. And then I went to McKinsey and Company, did management consulting for a couple of years out of New York. Private equity was kind of blowing up. I was single for the first time in my adult life and decided to go back to Chicago, where I had had a lot of fun in business school. Started a private equity consulting firm there and opened up a $5 million, 12,000 square foot restaurant nightclub on the river. So that was fun for a couple of years.
Which came in handy this past week.
And it came in very handy for the Pacific Bitcoin Conference. And then, yeah, 3 more years of management consulting. And then I think it was really the global financial crisis of 08, 09 that really made me think, wow, not only having lived through the dot-com boom and bust at the start of my career, and I think that's what made me want to get on solid ground and go to B school and, you know, go to consulting and all this stuff. Now I'm looking at that and I'm like, oh my God, like I can't be whipped around. I can't have my career and my life whipped around by these external factors. Like, I want to have more control. I want to be working in something that's like just where I benefit from the efforts of my labor and my thought and my networking. Mm-hmm. So that made me want to get into early stage startups. I went to Google very much deliberately. First good career decision I ever made, treated it like internet business school. So I went there in 2011, very much trying to break into the Silicon Valley ecosystem. Networked like crazy from having a Google address. And yeah, everybody would take a coffee or take a call. Met like 1,000 founders and VCs in a couple of years out of Chicago, and then moving out to LA after getting married. And then, yeah, by summer of 13, I felt comfortable getting into startups full time. So that's what I've been doing. I'm coming up on almost 10 years now in startups full time. Been involved with over 65 companies as an investor and advisor, probably pretty intimately with about 30 of those. My sweet spot for about 4 years straight was being the external advisor directly to a Silicon Valley venture-backed CEO working on strategy and fundraising. So I did that for a long time. I helped raise over $250 million for, you know, seed and A stage startups through about 2019. And I started Swan in 2019.
You said in 2018 is when you really kind of grokked Bitcoin and you realized that this is different than everything else. What was it that helped you figure that out?
Well, I mean, I was seeing all the pitches, and I was coming from somebody who'd been raising money since 2004, and obviously had to sit through a lot of other people's pitches along the way. And then I'd been investing since 2012 when I was still at Google in startups. And so I'd seen a lot of startup pitches that way. And each time I thought there might be something there, as I dug in deeper, I realized there was no there. That went for, you know, the first thing I did was like one of the first NFT projects. And I was like consulting to them after they did their ICO. And, you know, they were good guys and they were good technologists and they had all this money and, you know, all these smart people around. But I just like, when it came down to it, it was like it was the business version of my old boss in my B school internship at Vitamin Water. Darius wouldn't drink vitamin water because it had too much sugar in it. So he just drank Diet Coke. Like, the whole executive team just drinks Diet Coke at Vitamin Water. And like, I was like, man, this emperor has no clothes. And at the end of the day, like when you dig in and you get through all the jargon and all the dressed up Silicon Valley and Andreessen Horowitz blogs and the future is crypto and tokenize the world and all this stuff, like there just wasn't anything there. And then, so as my view of what crypto was like going down in my estimation, I was starting to get punching through the incredible amount of noise. Because remember in 2017, like there was very little Bitcoin only education out there. It's not like today. But little by little, I started to find the signal. I think I'm pretty famous for saying it started with Jimmy Song at a crypto conference in Santa Monica, I think the beginning of November, end of October in 2017. And it's kind of a famous story at this point, but I saw this dude on the lawn outside the conference talking to a few people, and he had a cowboy hat on. And he was just looking around like with daggers, like he absolutely hated everyone around him. And I found that very attractive. So I went over and got to know him a little bit. And he explained to me, you know, the basics of why, you know, none of this crypto blockchain stuff meant anything. And Bitcoin is the only thing that matters. And started watching him in town. And that led to Andreas. And then it led to, you know, obviously Stefan and Marty. And then Safe's book came out in like March of 18, I think was great. And then there was a big scary gram that came across from Jay Clayton, I think was in March of 18 when he said, yeah, they're all securities. And I was like, bro, I got a family. So then I started going like really deep. And I mean, it was definitely like by the end of March, beginning of April of 2018, that I was like, well, even from an economic standpoint, it's clear that Bitcoin matters more than everything else by a factor of like 1,000.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be 1,000 times bigger than everything else combined in the long run. And then as I just kept on going and going, I just became more and more passionate about Bitcoin and tried to like jam a Bitcoin ecosystem fund into the like crypto fund that I was working on at the time. And like that just didn't work. And as always, I go to Turkey for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks in the summer. And when I got back from that in August of 18, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to work on Bitcoin full time.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. Hey, I want to talk about the conference because I literally just got back yesterday and dude, I had a blast. Like I wasn't there for more than like halfway through the morning of the first day at the conference. And I just texted my wife. I was like, oh my God, you got to come to this conference next year. This is everything out here is just so cool. Like that's the only word that I can use to describe the experience was it was just so laid back, West Coast, LA, right? Just so cool. The basketball court. Dude, the basketball court was so much fun. Like I'm in there, I'm listening to all these amazing speakers. It's Bitcoin only, which was, you know, that alone just made it amazing. I go out for a break and like the people on the court, it was unbelievable. It was so much fun. The music, there was smack talking, like literally with a microphone, people talking smack as others are playing each one-on-one. And I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. So talk to us about the conference, setting it up. Like, what were you going for? Like,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think we had one motto or one mantra for all of 2022 for the company, and it was Bitcoin, not crypto. Mm. And basically, that one theme that you'll see us drive for all of 2023, and I think this kind of kicked it off at the conference, is Bitcoin is cool.
Yeah.
Like, and it literally is. It's literally the coolest thing on the planet.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey guys, this is Clay Fink. Before I became a host on We Study Billionaires, I hosted one of our other podcasts called Millennial Investing. Kyle Grieve and Patrick Donnelly have done an incredible job now hosting that show and taking it to the next level. For example, Kyle recently hosted an amazing episode with Chris Mayer on episode 310 that gave a masterclass on serial acquirers. Serial acquirers are a very interesting business model with very strong multi-bagger potential. This makes them potentially the dream business for stock pickers like us. Kyle also hosted some other amazing episodes packed full of timeless investing wisdom with guests like Lawrence Cunningham, Robert Hagstrom, and Brian Feraldi. Millennial Investing, along with We Study Billionaires, is definitely one you should add to your arsenal of top podcasts. Check it out today by searching for Millennial Investing on your favorite podcast app and clicking the follow button. Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account. When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet. But I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? For me, nothing beats having my next flight free thanks to NerdWallet. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
All right, back to the show.
Corey, everybody that I passed, that I talked to, they were like, this conference is just cool. Like, this conference is so much fun. I'm having a blast. I mean, you're right there in Santa Monica, California, dude. It was like,
you're at the airport. There's private jets. There's basketball. The Compton Magic is there. There's NBA players walking around. Like, the music is amazing. You know, it's all the little things, you know, it's just, we have a lot of people that have thrown parties and put on events over the years. And I kind of knew that those people kind of gravitate toward us, I think, just because of the beacon signal that we give out. You know, even Jan Pritzker, our CTO, author of, you know, my favorite book on Bitcoin, Reverb, the company he co-founded, was very social and very content driven and very event driven. And it was all about musicians. Talk about a cool company. That was a cool company. You know, and they sold for 300 mil or whatever a few years ago, but it was all about, it's a marketplace for used music equipment. But yeah, up and down the company. I mean, Brady Swenson's been organizing parties since he was in college. Brandon Quittam is a leader of men, been organizing parties for 20 some years. I mean, everybody at the company, I mean, Kristen Thompson, who put on this event, I mean, she's from Hidden Hills, which is like, that's like, okay, cool, you're in Calabasas, but like, are you in Hidden Hills? Like, she grew up there riding horses and stuff, and she used to bartend on the Sunset Strip. Like, these people know cool. I used to throw a Halloween party with some friends in Chicago every year that was just like completely free, VIP only, invite only. And it was bigger than the Pacific Bitcoin Conference. Like, I met my wife at a party with 1,400 people at it in a two-story loft in Chicago with named DJs and premium liquor and cops working security and the whole deal. Like, this is not new for us, but we like it. It's fun.
You could tell. And I think it's, you could tell.
Yeah. Man. I mean, but it was unreal. We want to celebrate, you know? And so it's just, it's 100 little decisions that you just dial on and you do this instead of that. You do this instead of that. When you have to cut something, you cut this, but don't cut that. And I think we got to something that was really cool. And then, I mean, Swan is signal in Bitcoin for a certain type of person. And then you throw in probably like, you know, if there were 1,200 people there, 200 of them were probably people that got converted to us because we saved their finances earlier this year. So they were just like, it was like a pilgrimage. There were people from all over the world coming just to try to meet us because we
helped them
save their money.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're already gearing up for the next one. We've already sold a few hundred tickets for next year.
I believe, I believe.
Yeah. So we've got it up. Sorry to shill, but yeah, PacificBitcoin2023.com has the tickets, both super discount. I think it's $249 for GA and like $1,499 for VIP. Man, that VIP section, I kind of wish that I could have just attended because that was just like the coolest way to watch a conference.
Let me tell you, it was bad.
Couches all over the place that you could just sit on. And then the networking, like if you wanted to hang out at the bar, you're still able to watch the speeches, which I think is huge. So yeah, it was great.
Dude, it was great. It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. All right.
I'm still recovering. You're the first adult that I've talked to in a normal conversation today. I've been dealing with my kids all morning because one's sick and the other one's school got closed for the day. So it's nice to talk to you.
All I can say is bravo. Like I left, I walked in the house, you know, my wife was watching the kids and she saw me roll in and I was just like beaming and she's like, well, welcome home. Now you can help me out with the kids. And I was like, but you don't understand. I just came back from this conference. It was amazing. She's like, I'm sure it was, Preston. I'm sure it was. But
yeah, I went through the same thing. Thank goodness my wife was able to come for a couple of hours on Friday afternoon and kind of see it. And then she and the kids were able to join us for the
Nice meeting them.
VIP brunch on Saturday.
So, yeah, it was really nice meeting them.
We hope to meet your better half next year.
Yeah, I told her you have to go. We're going to, you know, my parents could come watch the kids and the two of us are going to go for sure because it was
awesome.
A blast. Yes. Oh, and one other thing, the professor. So I go out there. I had no idea who this guy was. I go out for a break. I'm outside. Just, you know, you just walk, gravitate towards the basketball court because there was always something happening. So I go over there and this guy is playing basketball at a level that I like, you could have shown me a video and be like, there's no way like all of that was real that I just watched. But I was there in person watching this guy. It was unbelievable. Like, how can a person possibly play like that? Mm-hmm. And he's not that tall. Like, he's not that big, but like his moves.
And he's 37. He's 37.
Of course
he's quicker than like any 20-year-old, and he's 37.
Like, what is his, what's his story? What's his real story? Cause
yeah. So the professor, Grayson Boucher is his name. He got famous in the late 90s, early 2000s as, on the And One mixtape tour. So this was like streetball legends, and they built a clothing brand around it and a shoe brand around it. I think Steph Marbury was a spokesperson for them back in the day. Anyway, so he got famous from that, and then And One ended up in other hands, and they mismanaged it and basically shut it down, and he had to relaunch himself, you know, probably 8-9 years ago as a YouTube and social media personality. He loved doing basketball. He absolutely, like, he personally loves editing video and loves social media. So he's really good at it. And he has a great team, mostly made up of like his homies and like his brother and his cousin and stuff like that. And they just go around and shoot basketball related content. But he's gotten super famous. He's got a bunch of videos with, you know, anywhere from like 5 to 50 million views. I mean, huge, huge, huge numbers.
That's unbelievable.
This guy posts.
It was unbelievable.
He's a super nice guy, very sort of high integrity, very moral, very smart. I'm investing a lot of time in him because I'm trying to orange pill the hell out of him because he just has such global reach. Basketball is cool. The professor is cool. And he's one of those people that I think should be on the mission.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
Yeah. So he's here. I really like, it didn't really make any sense, I guess, unless from like a branding perspective, but there's not like an ROI. He was one of only two people that we paid to come speak at the conference. We paid, Alex Epstein's speaker fee, which was totally reasonable. And then, you know, the professor was probably like way over budget for what we should be spending to have somebody come. But like, I just felt it was the right thing to do.
It was.
Like you said, it brought so much energy to it. And yeah, it was so fun. And again, it's a down payment on if we can get this dude to read a few books and listen to some podcasts and become a Bitcoiner. Like, oh my God, he's one of those people that could really change it because his reach is just so big. Huge. And he's like, I've been talking a lot for the last few months about the shelling points of cool.
Okay.
You know, because we like shelling points in Bitcoin. Like obviously Bitcoin's a shelling point of money, but a shelling point of cool is something that everyone thinks everybody else thinks is cool.
Yeah.
So like NASCAR doesn't make the cut, but Formula One does.
Interesting.
Right. And baseball doesn't make the cut, but basketball does. And country doesn't make the cut, but hip hop does. Things like that. And surfing, obviously. So we had a lot of surf. We had basketball. We had the professor. We're trying to just identify. We're always brainstorming on like, what are the things that everybody thinks is cool, but everybody thinks everybody else will think is cool, basically. And I think that's what we need to associate Bitcoin with.
Yeah, I like that.
Firemen are a great example.
Cool. I like that. I hope he comes back next year. I hope you have him back because, my goodness, I'm sure everybody that left that was out there that saw him, like, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've told the story to since I've come back of just like how incredible this guy was sending them. Well,
Did you see Ray Ray from the Compton Magic?
I did. He was unbelievable too.
Amazing. He's an incredible player. And he took the mic and was basically like a guest MC for, you know, probably 30 minutes doing a bunch of stuff right next to Dante and Yusuf while the Compton Magic was out there doing their dunk contest and their knockout tournament and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's an amazing talent. We're straight up going to sign him for something for real. Like he turns 18 in January and can, you know, name, image, likeness. You can start getting paid. I already extended an offer to him and his mom to have him be one of the MCs for next year.
Oh, that's so awesome, Corey.
Yeah, he's on Twitter now. Like he joined Twitter. He has 100 followers. I retweeted him today. I put an amazing picture of him trying to do a crossover on the professor. Like he's going to be out there. Anyway, we've orange-pilled Tope, the guy who owns and runs the Compton Magic. So he's the coach and CEO, and he is totally into Bitcoin. We're sponsoring their entire coaching staff through the Bitcoin benefit plan. So we actually were sending the Bitcoin directly to his entire coaching staff every month, the same way that the Swans do and the IKEA stores and all these other people that participate in the Bitcoin benefit plan. So we're sponsoring them that way. And he's just trying to orange pill his kids, who will basically, most of them will become at least college famous. And he's got 5 lotto picks in the last 3 years. So these kids a lot of times become big stars in the NBA as well.
So, Corey, we're going to have links to the professor. We're going to have links to the Compton Magic. We're going to have links to Pacific Bitcoin for next year, Swan. Yeah. What else do you want to highlight or anything like that before we wrap things up? And can't thank you enough for coming on, man. This was awesome. Of course.
Long overdue. Glad we're doing it. Won't be the last time. And thank you, by the way, for always coming and supporting Swan Signal Live and, you know, Hard Money and the shows that you've done with us. So appreciate you. I think a lot of people are looking at Bitcoin now and realizing this is something that they'd like to do professionally. Mm-hmm. So I think, Bitcoiner Jobs, by far the biggest jobs website in the space, is a great one to post in the notes. Obviously, Swan posts all our jobs there, and so do, I think, 50 or 60 other Bitcoin companies. And increasingly, companies that are looking for Bitcoiners are getting added to it. So companies that are run by Bitcoiners and they're looking for Bitcoiners, I think it's just a really interesting niche in the job space, because there's so much that's already said when a Bitcoiner meets a Bitcoiner.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's all I have, man. I really appreciated that your rundown on everything happening right now at the start of the show was just phenomenal. But thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a blast, and I look forward to doing it again in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks, Preston.
If you guys enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the show on whatever podcast application you use. Just search for We Study Billionaires. The Bitcoin specific shows come out every Wednesday, and I'd love to have you as a regular listener. If you enjoyed the show, or you learned something new, or you found it valuable, if you can leave a review, we would really appreciate that. And it's something that helps others find the interview in the search algorithm. So anything you can do to help out with a review, we would just greatly appreciate. And with that, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes, courses, or forums, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.